arms. Their mouths met, brushing lightly, then shifted into a deeper, lingering kiss that left her weak. With a smothered laugh, she fell back as he tipped her back on the bed and settled into the cradle of her hips. Anne nuzzled his cheek, and the shadow of stubble on his chin scraping over her skin made her shiver. "I think I love you more than I did before. Is that possible? It's like falling in love with you, all over again." Cedric kissed the corners of her mouth, urging her lips into a smile. "I could spend the rest of my life like that, waking up and falling in love with you." Anne arched her hips, encouraging him to enter her. Cedric possessed her mouth and slid into her welcoming heat. With each gentle thrust, they seemed to merge further until they moved in perfect rhythm. One second she was a solitary creature, and the next she was part of something bigger, something mysterious she couldn't explain. Every impossible dream she'd ever had seemed suddenly within reach. With Cedric at her side, she could do anything. His warm mouth settled over her breast, and his teeth scraped her aching nipple, making her shove her hips hard into his. What had begun so sweet and sensual now turned raw and primal. Anne had to have him buried inside her, to feel him reaching her soul. When their pace became too fast, Cedric slowed it, and Anne thrashed her head wildly, desperate for release. "Please, Cedric!" She almost wept, needing to climax. He gasped and fought off his own release as he panted against her neck. "You've ruined me for every other woman, Anne. I'm yours, always." His words caused a burst of stars and light inside the core of her being. She couldn't resist the explosion of pleasure and love as her orgasm spread through her. His own harsh cry of release softened as he came deep inside her. It was she this time who wished they had created a life. It only seemed right that such love, such joy would leave a miracle like a child in its wake. Cedric rolled off her and tucked her in against him, pulling the sheets high above their bodies. "I love you, Anne." He kissed the tip of her nose and sighed. "And I love you." They didn't need any other words. Anne paused before a dressmaker's shop on the Stein, not too far away from Donaldson's library. Everywhere around them were people in colourful clothes. Shop windows decorated the sides of the streets, and crowds moved in throngs. Many flocked to Brighton to visit the sea, others to ride through the picturesque streets in their barouches and make a social display. Anne found it all amusing and oddly delightful to watch. "What do you think about me buying some new gowns?" she asked. Cedric smiled.
"Only so long as they are brightly coloured."
"Thank heavens we didn't stay in London. My lack of proper morning attire would scandalise everyone." Anne peered closely into the window, studying the fabric reflections and the styles.
"Well, if you wish to go in, I'll wait outside."
Before Anne could reply, Ashton joined them outside the shop.
"Cedric, I'm off to Donaldson's, if you'd like to accompany me."
Anne smiled, relief sweeping through her at Ashton's thoughtfulness. She didn't like Cedric to be on his own when they were away from the house. He wasn't familiar with the streets, and he could easily get turned around, hurt or lost, set upon by footpads, even hit by a coach. The fears of what could happen to him were almost endless, and difficult to put out of mind.
"You should go, Cedric. Keep Lord Lennox out of trouble. I'll join you at the library."
Anne stood up on tiptoe and brushed a kiss on his cheek.
"Are you sure?"
"Quite sure."
Anne turned back to the shop when the two men departed.
"Excuse me, I don't mean to be presumptuous, but are you Viscountess Sheridan?"
A buxom lady with a cheery face and dark hair smiled down at her. Anne blinked.
"I am. I'm terribly sorry to be so forward. I am Lady Pickering, wife of Sir Edward Pickering. We live not too far from you and your husband. I've been meaning to send you a letter to invite you to dine with us tonight. I apologize for the late notice, but I couldn't resist now that I've happened to meet you.
It's a pleasure, Lady Pickering. I am ashamed that I haven't thought to write to you myself. Cedric has spoken at length about you both. My husband and I would be delighted to attend your dinner.
Wonderful. Edward will be so pleased.
Lady Pickering joined her at the shop window.
Lovely, aren't they? The modiste here is so much better than those in London. Are you going in? I'd love to join you. I need a few gowns myself.
Lady Pickering's eyes swept over the window display of fine fabrics and stylish hats. There was something about the woman that felt warm, motherly even, something Anne had little experience with, but had always longed for.
If you'd like, Anne said, I would love the company.
Lady Pickering clapped her gloved hands together.
Splendid! Shall we?
Anne followed the woman into the shop, and the modiste and her assistant met them at the door. They took turns getting their measurements, and then were provided with some plates of various styles to consider.
May I speak frankly with you?
Lady Pickering's tone was cautious as they sat next to each other on a settee, and thumbed through the fashion plates. Anne glanced at the woman, a little concerned, but she nodded.
I've heard the news about your father and your marriage only a week after his passing.
Lady Pickering toyed with a blue ribbon on her sleeve as she spoke.
I'm not at all sure how to say this.
Anne's stomach clenched.
Please, Lady Pickering, speak your mind.
Her cheeks reddened.
Well, Lady Sheridan, the former one, that is, was a dear, dear friend of mine. When she died, it quite broke my heart, you see. We were friends since our youth, and our husbands were friends as well. Losing them was devastating, not only to Edward and me, but to everyone who knew them. The Sheridan family is well respected and loved. The boy, pardon me, she cleared her throat, Viscount Sheridan is just as dear to me, like a son in many ways. He may be a bit of a rogue, but he is a good man, and he deserves a wife who loves him.
Anne gave a sigh of relief. Reaching out, she covered Lady Pickering's hand with her own.
I love my husband to distraction. Despite the unorthodox start to our union, I love him more each passing day than I ever believed possible.
Lady Pickering smiled, though it was tinged with sadness.
That was all I wanted to know. Now, about dinner, what would his lordship prefer to eat? I will happily alter the menu, since I suspect some foods must be difficult for him.
Surprise flickered through Anne at the woman's astuteness. There were plenty of foods that made dining difficult for Cedric, but Lady Pickering was thoughtful enough to realize this. It only made Anne adore her all the more.
Anything eaten easily by spoon is preferable, she answered,
though in truth he'd found it less and less trying to manage a knife and fork as of late.
That shouldn't be too difficult.
Lady Pickering handed the plates back to the modiste, gesturing her interest in some of the styles. Anne did the same. After an hour, the ladies had ordered several excellent gowns. Anne didn't want to leave Lady Pickering, who was perusing a few hats on display in a window at the milliner's shop next door, but she felt it was time to rejoin Cedric.
Lady Pickering, I hate to leave, but I must find my husband.
The other woman laughed.
Of course, my dear. Off you go. Dinner is at 8. Thank you.
Anne bid her goodbye and crossed the busy street toward Donaldson's library. Samir al-Zurani mounted his horse and trotted down one of the main streets of Brighton. He muttered a string of curses at his black luck these past few days. He'd learned where his prize horses were being kept, right alongside inferior English nags, but he could not retrieve them both alone. He'd also missed an opportunity to take Sheridan's wife in the woods by the lake. The house had been full of servants after that. But today was the first day the couple had left the sanctuary and gone into Brighton,
and he'd sensed a fresh opportunity. Soon his ship would arrive, and he could leave this wretched isle. But first he had to acquire what he came for. Foolish Englishmen and their pride, thinking they could not be attacked in a crowded city, what little they knew. Sheridan and a companion with light blonde hair had separated from Sheridan's wife, leaving her vulnerable, exposed.
"If I can kill her, it will leave Sheridan on unsteady ground."
He waited. In time, Lady Sheridan exited a dressmaker's shop and waved goodbye to an older matron before crossing the street. Samir kicked his heels into his horse's sides, and the beast jolted forward. A black stallion rushed at Anne from the side as she crossed the road. The horse reared, and Anne screamed, stumbling to the ground. The horse calmed, and the rider, a handsome olive-skinned man with dark hair and darker eyes, slid from the saddle to help her to her feet.
"A thousand pardons. You crossed so quickly in front of me, I did not see you."
His gaze ran the length of her body.
"You're not injured, I trust."
Flustered and smarting from her fall, Anne hastily shook her head.
No, I'm fine, thank you."
She tried to tug free of his hold on her waist.
"Please, sir, let me go."
For a moment she feared that he had no such intention, but her fall had attracted the attention of a number of people, who were also coming to check and see if she had been injured. His hands dropped.
"Again, my apologies. It has been some time since I've been in the presence of a lovely woman. It has made my manners lax."
The gleam in his eyes now made her uncomfortable.
"Excuse me."
She darted around him and back into the street. It was rude, she knew, but something about him. She didn't want to stay. She forced her ill thoughts off with a shrug, convincing herself it was nonsense. Donaldson's library was a timber-boarded building, freshly painted in white. A large veranda overlooked part of the circulating library. A group of ladies gathered like brightly coloured birds in a small flock, gossiping beneath the veranda. Anne avoided them. Their chatter, no doubt, would lead to trouble later in the two popular Brighton assembly rooms, the Castle Inn and the Old Ship Inn. Thank heaven Cedric wasn't one for balls and dancing any more. Although Anne had to admit she wished she could have danced with him, just once. Their first opportunity had been lost, and in the years she'd known him, they'd never had a chance to make up for it. She entered the spacious rooms of Donaldson's library, trying not to think about how she wanted one silly quadrille or a waltz with her husband. Though he grew more confident in his step each day, she knew he'd fret about falling or stepping on her toes in a public gathering. The ton could be a cruel bunch when they thought they could prey on a weak party. Her nose stung a little with a rush of emotions. The sadness. The disappointment. Such a small thing to desire, yet its very unattainability only made her want it more. The library shelves were filled. The spines gleamed in the light that cut through the windows. She paused at a nearby reading table, resting her palms on the gleaming wooden surface to slow her breath. A few young ladies walked past, books in their arms, whispering with little smiles.
"Did you see that gentleman, the blind one?"
the taller of the two ladies asked her friend. Every muscle in Anne's body tensed. They had to be talking about Cedric. What were the odds of another blind man in a library in Brighton? Were they going to laugh at him? If they did, so help them. Her husband had survived enough and didn't deserve to endure any mockery of his condition. The other woman blushed and ducked her head, her bonnet hiding her face from view.
"Such a handsome man."
"Wasn't he? And his friend, the blonde-haired gentleman."
She sighed wistfully.
"But I could not possibly ask to be introduced to a stranger. Such a pity."
The ladies disappeared around a back row of bookshelves. Anne relaxed, collected herself, and hastened the way the ladies had come. She found her husband and his friend seated in a pair of chairs by a reading table. Cedric leaned forward, his forearms resting on his knees as he spoke to Ashton. When she came into view, Ashton looked to her, then back to Cedric. Cedric continued to speak, unaware of her approach behind him. "It's a new world, Ash. Believe me, marriage is surprisingly wonderful. Are you sure you don't want to give it a go?" Ashton's lips twitched as he put a finger to his lips to indicate Anne should remain silent. She paused a few feet away, holding her breath. "And what exactly is so wonderful about it? I admit, I'm quite intrigued by your newfound eagerness." Ashton flashed her a wink, and she fought to contain a giggle. Cedric leaned back in his chair, lacing his fingers behind his head. "There's nothing better than having the most beautiful creature in your bed at any time you please. Much better than a mistress. And I'm sure my wife would agree. Access to me at all times is a benefit of Leg Shackledom." Cedric's smug tone sparked a reaction in Anne that was half amusement, half exasperation. "Wouldn't you agree, lady wife?" Cedric chuckled and turned his head in her direction. "Oh, you beastly man!" Anne laughed and rushed over to him, swatting his shoulder with a gloved hand. When he tugged her over to his chair and onto his lap, she squeaked in surprise. "You knew I was there the whole time, didn't you?" Cedric nodded, that playful grin making her melt. She adored the way he unleashed that smile on her without holding back. "Your scent, remember?" He nuzzled her cheek. "It gives you away." For a long moment she surrendered to his embrace, loving the feel of his arms around her, cuddling her close to him. An old woman with a bonnet covered in wilting ostrich feathers gasped at them as she rounded a bookshelf and spied Anne on Cedric's lap, his arms wrapped around her.
"This is a library,"
she said, clearly scandalized.
"Pardon me, madam," Cedric replied politely, "but my wife and I require some privacy. Sod off."
The old woman bristled and thumped the top of her parasol on the wooden floor.
"How dare you, Sarah!" she blustered and left.
"Oh dear," Ashton said, laughing. "That was Lady Beach, you know, one of Prinny's acquaintances." Cedric snorted and hugged Anne even closer.
"Lady Beach be damned. I want to hold my wife."
Anne glanced about, making sure no one else was watching them, before she kissed Cedric's cheek. It was something she hadn't yet tired of, this delightful ability to touch him, kiss him, whenever she wanted. The man had been right about the benefits of marriage.
"How was your dress shopping, love?"
"Fine, thank you. Lady Pickering was there. We are invited to dine tonight at their house. Is that all right? She's such a dear, I didn't want to refuse her."
"Lady Pickering," Cedric mused. "Second mother, if I ever had one. Always trying to fatten me up."
Anne sobered.
"Yes, well, she's right, too. You've grown too slender, husband. I don't like it. If I must become a meddlesome, bothersome wife to take care of you, then I shall."
"If telling me to eat more is your idea of being bothersome, then I adore you even more."
Cedric began to nibble on her ear, and Anne shivered. Desire blasted through her like a bolt of lightning.
"Well, I shall leave you two to peruse Donaldson's a bit," said Ashton. "A ship of mine just came into port, and I need to check on it. Shall I meet you back at the house after dinner this evening?"
Anne sat up.
"I'm sure Lady Pickering would love for you to join us."
Ashton waved a hand.
"She is a wonderful woman, but I'm afraid I must see to business, and it may take more time than expected. Send Lady Pickering my regards."
As Ashton departed, something inside her sighed a little. Lord Lennox was an enigma. He always seemed to be alone, save for the other members of the League.
"What's the matter, Anne? I can hear you thinking."
Cedric jostled her a little in his arms to get her attention.
"I'm worried about Lord Lennox. He seems so lonely at times, so focused on his work."
Cedric's blank eyes betrayed no emotion, but his smile wilted a little.
"Ash is a very complex man. You know what they say, still waters run deep."
"Have you known him all your life?"
Anne had to admit the League of Rogues had always fascinated her. Five wealthy, powerful noblemen who eschewed society's formalities and made vices their mistresses. It should have been a topic she'd avoided to contemplate, yet she couldn't resist. But she felt her knowledge of their pasts and relationships was likely based on rumor, and the Quizzing Glass Gazette more than truth. We met at Cambridge. I had seen him around the grounds of Magdalen College, but we hadn't been formally introduced. He and Lucien were friends, and Godric and I were friends. We were two separate pairs, if that makes sense. He chuckled.
What about Charles? How did you all finally meet? And where does he come in?
Cedric's expression shuttered closed, and Anne didn't press him. There was one night. In the late fall, Godric and I were sneaking back to our rooms. We saw someone drowning in the river, and a friend of ours, Peter Wellesley, was trying to save him. Two other men, I later found out, they were Ashton and Lucien, joined Godric and I as we dove into the river to save the drowning man, which was Charles, and assist Peter. Charles had been bound hand and foot, and Peter helped me cut him loose. We saved Charles. But Peter, he didn't make it. He stayed beneath the water too long, trying to hold Charles up. The loss was a great one to all of us. Peter was one of Charles's dearest friends, and one the rest of us knew well. After that night, we five became inseparable. Bonds of grief can do that. Little puzzle pieces seemed to slide into place for Anne.
Charles is the key that holds you all together.
For a moment Cedric said nothing, as if matters couldn't be so easily summed up as that. At first, but over time each of us has formed close ties to one another. There is nothing like knowing a man who has fought through hell and back beside you to solidify a bond. Charles's cheeks were a little ruddy with embarrassment, but she loved him for it, loved the way he loved his friends. Not many men or women could boast of such a close connection.
And Mr. St. Laurent, Godric's brother?
Jonathan, Cedric chuckled. He is a welcome addition to our number. That reminds me. His tone turned serious. Anne, how would you feel about selling your father's house in London? Jonathan is interested in settling down and is considering courting Audrey, at least according to Ashton. I gave him my blessing and thought we might help him out a bit. Cedric paused, then took a deep breath before continuing. I thought, perhaps, if you agreed, we might sell it to Jonathan. I would love to see that house filled with love and children. But if you wish to keep it, we will. The choice is yours. Anne's eyes stung. Her father. In the past few weeks she had been so happy that she'd almost forgotten, and it moved her that Cedric would ask her what she wanted to do. Once they married, all of her property had become his. He could have sold the home without asking her, but he hadn't. It was a tempting thought to keep the house, but it was better to let it go. If it went to Jonathan and perhaps Audrey, they would see the house frequently enough, and it was as he'd said, it would be filled with love and children.
If Mr. St. Laurent is interested, then we should. I will trust you to see to the arrangements.
Excellent. I can have Ashton write him a letter, and if he's amenable to it, we can get my solicitor to draw up the paperwork.
Thank you.
She meant it. To show him, she leaned into him, curling her arms around his neck and kissing him thoroughly, despite the public nature of where they were. He groaned at her assertive kiss and returned it, but all too soon had to pull them apart. I wish we could continue this, my heart, but Lady Beach will not be our last unwelcome spectator if we do not go home at once. Some enterprising scamp might start selling tickets. She couldn't help but giggle as she climbed off his lap.
Then by all means, husband, summon a coach.
As you wish. His lips curved into that smile that had won her heart the very first time she'd seen him. Only this time it was even brighter, because it was full of love. For a moment she was unexpectedly afraid.
What if I were to lose him now? My heart is too tightly bound to his. If he were to go, so would I.
If any other woman would have told Anne she'd felt that way about a man, Anne would have thought she was being melodramatic. But now she understood. A deeper connection was forged by two hearts, and it could not be easily broken.
She slipped her arm in his as they left Donaldson's library. Swallowing hard, she tried to think about something else. The dinner tonight. That would be wonderful and fun. Yes, the dinner. Everything would be fine. If only something inside her didn't keep worrying that she was going to lose Cedric forever.
Chapter 22.
Well, that wasn't a complete disaster, was it?
Cedric chuckled as he climbed into his coach across from Anne. Anne grinned.
No, it wasn't. You did wonderfully.
She held something in her arms, something Cedric could not see. It was a surprise for him, one she and Lady Pickering were quite excited about. They had managed to smuggle it all the way to the coach without Cedric suspecting anything.
"Why don't you come and sit by me, lady wife?" he suggested, with a brow raised in that rakish way of his. It took all her self-control not to giggle. It had been a long while since she'd given something to someone she cared about. Her heart beat faster as she finally spoke.
All right.
She joined him on his side of the enclosed coach and let him pull her against his side. When he leaned in closer, he froze, nostrils flaring. His eyes widened, then narrowed.
I smell.
He paused, sniffed. Then his hands moved from her waist to her arms. When he encountered the bundle she cradled to her bosom, he stiffened.
Anne, are you... is that a dog?
He tilted his head to one side. The deep rumble of his voice stirred the creature awake. The puppy in her arms stretched, yawned, and licked Cedric's fingers, which had brushed against the pup's wet nose.
Lady Pickering's favourite King Charles Spaniel had a litter 2 months ago. She thought we might like one. She said your mother loved King Charles Spaniels.
Anne prayed he wasn't upset. Cedric had given her so much, and she wanted to give something to him in return. He couldn't go hunting, and a large dog wouldn't have been happy in the house. A smaller spaniel was perfect. The dog would be a companion to Cedric, one who would follow him and keep him in good spirits.
Did you know that I bought Emily a dog?
Cedric's lips hinted at a barely there smile.
Why, yes. I remember she told me about her foxhound, Penelope.
She paused.
I swear my intentions are entirely different.
Cedric's rich laugh warmed her.
If you got me a dog to keep me from escaping you, I would take that as a compliment, my dear. Now, show me the little scamp.
He opened his hands, and Anne passed along the sleepy bundle. It had woken during their discussion and wriggled in Cedric's arms as he took it. Watching him cuddle the white and cinnamon-brown pup to his chest filled Anne with such love.
My mother's last spaniel before she died was an energetic chap. Forrest was his name. I always liked the little fellow. What do you think, love? Does he look like a Forrest?
Cedric ruffled the dog's ears with a playful smile. Even though he could not see the dog, he was evidently enthralled with the pup already.
Yes, he looks like a Forrest.
She covered her mouth with a gloved hand. To be so happy, she couldn't believe it. Wherever her father was, she hoped he could see that she was all right, that she found her place in the world at this man's side.
When we get home, this little chap is going to a basket to sleep. And you, lady wife, will be seeing to your duties in our bed.
The cheek of such words would have enraged her had any other man said them. But when they came from Cedric, it lit her blood and made her body yearn.
If I see to my duties, then you must see to yours.
She couldn't resist teasing him. His rake-hell grin sent her pulse into a mad gallop. The coach stopped, and when the footman came to open the doors, Anne smiled when she recognized Sean Hartley.
Sean, that's you?
Cedric held out the dog to him.
Take little Forrest here and put him in a basket in your chambers. I'll take charge of him in the morning. My wife and I will be occupied the rest of the night.
Of course, my lord.
Sean took the dog with a smile and stroked its ears. He gave a quick glance to Anne, and she returned a nod, encouraging him to do as he was bid. As she and Cedric entered the house, they found the servants were scarce, as though sensing the need for privacy for their master and mistress.
"Take me to the drawing room," Cedric commanded. Anne slipped her hand into his and led him. He used his cane to sweep across the carpets. Anne pushed the door open, revealing the rich Tudor decorations and the plush red settee facing a black marble fireplace. Wooden beams, intricately carved, curved up the fluted shapes over the moulded ceilings. Red damask drapes covered the tall windows, and moonlight peeped through the thin slits of the mostly closed curtains. Despite the fact that no fire was lit, the room felt cosy, even if it was dark. Cedric began to lead her, as though he knew the whereabouts of the room's furniture by heart. He stopped in front of the settee and turned her to face away from him.
"It is dark, isn't it?" he asked. His tone was soft, low, and dangerously seductive. Anne swallowed before replying.
"Yes, quite dark."
"Good. I want you to close your eyes. I'm going to make love to you, and I want you to feel it as I do, with sensations and sounds, but no sight."
"But..."
"Close your eyes." The dark command from him flooded her belly with welcome heat. "You and I will share the darkness together. Feel it. Embrace it." He slid one hand around her waist to cover her stomach. His large, powerful grip was firm and possessive, and the heavy, warm breath against her ear was thick with forbidden carnality. "Lift your left leg and place your foot on the cushion of the settee," he murmured, before he kissed the shell of her ear, then nibbled on the lobe. Anne lulled into his seductive spell, leaned back against his body as she raised her leg. She had to tug her skirts up to her knees to do so, which seemed to be exactly what her husband desired. His palm remained on her stomach, holding her against him, while his other hand settled on her knee, then began to glide over her stockings and peel her skirts even higher up to her waist. He stroked her bare inner left thigh, which, with her leg propped up, gave him easy access to her. It was a struggle to keep her eyes closed as he touched her. There, in the darkness, they were together, and every sense was heightened.
"Breathe with me."
Cedric's fingers had reached the apex of her thighs. He parted the undergarments and stroked the wet lips of her sex. Anne breathed in, feeling him do the same behind her. One of his fingers slipped between the slick folds of her mound and penetrated her. Her hips jerked against his hand, and she whimpered in erotic delight.
"Hold your skirts up," he whispered.
Her hands, which had been fairly useless, latched onto the white crepe and sarsenet slip. The black wreaths on the bottom of her skirt whispered as she dug her fingers into the silk.
"Cedric,"
she murmured, as he continued to thrust that single finger into her, playing with her body as though reveling in his power to torture her with pleasure. He rocked his hips into her from behind.
"What do you feel?"
The hard pressure of his arousal dug into her lower back.
"You,"
she groaned. His deep laugh made her quiver around his teasing, tormenting finger.
"Besides me, little Hellion, what else do you feel?"
She focused on breathing as her body began to dance toward a climax.
"My blood is pumping hard. I can feel my heartbeat everywhere," she confessed. "And my breath. I can't get enough. I need you."
He nipped her neck and slid a second finger inside her, curling the tips of his fingers and brushing over some secret spot deep inside that made stars dart behind her closed lids.
"Let go, darling. I'm here to catch you,"
he coaxed her into the explosion of her release, and she couldn't even scream. He had barely touched her, yet this time she seemed connected to him on a level she hadn't thought possible. Her eyes were still closed, and all she had were sensations. The rough pads of his fingers, the warm breath on her neck, the hard body pinning her back against it, the roar of blood in her ears,
as her climax continued long afterward. This was how it felt for him when they came together. Pure sensation. There was so much she wanted to say, but couldn't seem to find the words. Her eyes flew open. He withdrew his fingers from her body and slipped them between his lips, sucking them. Her thighs quivered with longing as she watched his lips around his fingers with fascination.
"It is your turn, my lord."
She dropped her skirts and turned to face him. With a chuckle, he shook his head. "There's something else I had in mind since we first met." He retrieved his cane and held out his arm to her. She followed him as they walked through the house to the ballroom. Anne had glimpsed it when taking a short tour a few days before, but she'd never expected to come here with Cedric.
"Husband, what are you up to?"
Excitement fluttered inside her as she watched the moonbeams cut through the tall windows and light up the room. The floor gleamed invitingly, as though calling her to dance upon it. Cedric paused in the center of the room and spun her to face him. He set his cane down on the ground and sent it sliding several feet away. Then he straightened and held out his arms. "I believe you owe me a waltz, my heart." The smile on his face brought tears to her eyes. How had he guessed her secret wish for this very thing? It didn't matter that they weren't in a lively assembly room full of their peers. No, what mattered was that she was here, right now, with the man she loved, and they were finally going to have their dance. She could have danced all night with him if he asked her to. Walking into his embrace, she guided one of his hands to her waist and clasped his other hand in hers. Then he tugged her close enough that their bodies brushed.
"We have no music," she murmured,
studying his look of concentration. "We don't need it." He began to hum, the notes soft at first, a cappella. Then, as though more confident, he began to sing the notes, his voice clear and bell-like. He sang like an angel. She would never have guessed that about him. Grinning in delight, she followed his lead as he began. They moved together with such ease it surprised even her. Without anyone else in the room, he could guide her effortlessly, and she could follow him.
"Because I trust him."
Even after what Crispin had done to her that night at Almack's, she hadn't given up the deep belief inside that Cedric was her destiny. As broken as Crispin's violation of her had made her feel, Cedric had erased that pain. Not unlike a piece of pottery she'd once seen from Japan, shattered, and then fastened back together with gleaming powdered gold or silver seams. Kintsugi, her father had called it. The act of fixing something, letting the break symbolize something that was stronger for its being repaired. The gold illuminated the breaks that had been mended rather than hiding them. What had happened with Crispin no longer defined her. Moving on with her life, with love, with Cedric, were her gold seams holding her pieces back together, making her whole again. She was not simply another wronged woman. She was Anne Chesley, a woman who loved horses, the outdoors, and her husband. He let her be herself, and yet they shared all their joys, and now all their heartbreaks.
"And we have survived through them, finding our joy together again, because we lean upon each other. We are partners, equals."
The thoughts turned in her head, even as they turned around the ballroom. It was the sort of marriage her father had wished for her to have, and although he was gone, she knew he would have approved. "Are you all right, my love? I felt you shiver just now." Cedric's hand on her waist, so warm through the fabric of her dress, tightened a little as they continued to dance.
"Yes. Oh, yes. I've wanted to do this with you for years," she admitted.
The darkness and his blindness hid her blush, but she wasn't ashamed of the truth. "Perhaps we ought to dance every night before bed." He winked at her, and she laughed.
"I wouldn't argue with you on that."
She squeezed his hand, and he spun her out from him, twirling her around before pulling her back, which made her laugh in delight.
Let's have a ball next month. Invite all our friends. We can dance all night, darling.
A wonderful idea. We could let Audrey plan it when she returns from France. Perhaps she and Jonathan could plan it together.
Her husband chuckled. Are you matchmaking, my heart? She lifted her chin.
You said yourself Jonathan is considering courting her.
I think it will be an excellent way for them to spend more time around each other. Then it's settled, he agreed, and pulled her flush against him.
This isn't a waltz anymore,
she whispered against his ear.
There's no longer any music.
No, but it's something much better. Wouldn't you agree? He nuzzled her cheek and then kissed her temple. She shivered again, but this time from renewed desire.
Cedric, why don't we go upstairs to bed? I have a sudden need for you to fulfill your duties to me again.
Yes. But something had changed. Cedric's wicked grin faded, and his entire body went rigid. His hands on her hips dug into her heart. Anne, did you tell the servants to leave a window open? His words were so soft she almost didn't hear him, but she felt a faint breeze kiss the back of her neck.
No, I didn't.
She started to rotate toward the window when a sound froze her in place. Someone was clapping. What a charming show you put on, Sheridan. A cold voice cut through the gloom of the ballroom. Who's there? Cedric demanded, dragging Anne behind him, putting his body between her and the direction the voice came from. A soft hiss filled the air, echoing off the wooden floors. It sounded like a blade being drawn from a sheath. Her father had a sword from his days as an officer in the service. When she had been a little girl, he'd let her remove it once from its scabbard. It has been a long time, Lord Sheridan. A rich, accented voice came from the shadows by the open window.
No.
Cedric's utterance of that single word made Anne's blood turn to ice.
Oh, yes.
The man stepped forward. In the dim glow of moonlight, she could see the gleam of his white teeth against his skin. Something about that seemed familiar, but she couldn't remember why. Cedric's body began to tense. He started to maneuver them toward the door halfway between them and the man with the sword.
Anne, listen to me very carefully. Get Hartley and escape the house. Do you understand? Go now.
Cedric shoved her toward the door. After that, everything happened too quickly. She stumbled toward the door just as the man with the sword came toward them. By the time she reached the door, Cedric had positioned himself between her and the intruder. His foot brushed against his lion-head cane, which he picked up.
Cedric!
She screamed as the man lunged. Cedric swung his cane as though it were a broadsword. The man ducked, but not fast enough. Cedric clipped him on the shoulder.
Anne, go!
Cedric's bellow jarred her out of her frozen terror. She needed to find Sean, find help. She burst into the hall, right into a tall, hard body. Sean gripped her shoulder, holding her steady.
My lady? What?
Find Ashton. We need help. There's a man attacking Cedric.
She couldn't think beyond that. Sean was about to rush into the ballroom, but several men now emerged from an adjacent room. Men who couldn't be their servants. Their clothes were ragged, and they all carried pistols or knives.
My lady, get back inside. It isn't safe.
Sean pushed her into the ballroom as he turned to face the advancing men. She watched in terror as he charged the men, fists swinging. One man fell back onto the ground with a single blow. Sean then grabbed another's arm and broke it, causing him to let go of his weapon. He threw the screaming thug into one of his comrades and picked up the dropped blade. The man knew how to fight, but he couldn't escape all of the men, not forever.
Hartley, behind you!
She shouted from the ballroom doorway, warning him just before a pistol fired. Hartley had dropped down an instant before the gun discharged, and the bullet sank into the wall with a crack. He sprang forward and plunged the knife into the attacker before he could pull out a second pistol from his brace.
Get inside, my lady! Hartley shouted,
as two men tackled him and a third got past him to run toward her. She slammed the ballroom door, pushing against the heavy wood to keep it shut. Before she could recover, she was grabbed from behind, a blade pressed against her side as a warning for her to stay still.
"Don't move, Lady Sheridan, or you will regret it."
"Anne?"
Cedric's voice was distant, farther away. The man had evaded Cedric and gone directly for her. He gripped her by the back of the neck and dragged her in front of him. Two more men slipped through an open window. Anne tried to warn him of the others coming up behind him, but the man holding her squeezed her throat. She dug her fingertips into his hand, fighting for breath, while the invaders wrestled Cedric to the ground. He couldn't defend himself, lashing out wildly against unseen foes.
"Don't fight, Lord Sheridan. I have a blade to your wife's heart. It would be so easy to slip it between her ribs."
Cedric ceased his struggles and lay stomach down on the floor, the men pinning his arms and legs.
"Bind him,"
the man holding Anne barked. Two men used a coil of rope they had brought with them. Once bound, Cedric was pulled to his feet. His blank eyes drifted in her direction, but she still couldn't make a sound. The crushing grasp on her windpipe was too much.
"Take them to the coach, and be quick. Dispatch anyone who sees you. We must get back to port in time for the morning tide."
The man strangling her then let go, only to strike her across the back of her head. And she knew no more. Chapter 23.
Darkness. Damn the everlasting black.
Cedric hung from a rafter in the belly of a ship. At least, that was his best guess. The ropes around his wrists chafed him, where they stretched straight above his head. Whoever had strung him up had given him enough slack to have a sure footing on the floor, which was a good thing, because the ship kept pitching and rolling. The briny smell of seawater and aged wood filled his nose. He tried to think clearly. The last thing he remembered was being attacked in his own ballroom by Samir al-Zarani, whose voice he would recognize anywhere. Then he'd been ganged up on by a number of his men. Then he'd lost consciousness. Where was Anne? He called out her name, his voice hoarse and his throat dry.
"Ah, finally awake, Lord Sheridan."
Samir's cool voice taunted him from somewhere in front of him. Cedric jerked on the ropes binding him.
"Where is my wife?"
Samir chuckled, the sound a little closer.
"She is entertaining my men. Fair-skinned ladies fetch a high price, and she is in need of the practice in satisfying multiple men. I left her screaming like the English whore she is."
Cedric jerked on his wrists, the beam above him creaking slightly.
"You bloody bastard! I'll kill you!"
The roar vibrated through his entire body.
"Do be quiet, or I'll have the men bring her down so you might hear her screams yourself. Pity you cannot see. The sight of her body breaking might have blinded you."
Cedric fumed as he clawed at the rope to no avail. Suddenly something sharp dug into his ribs.
"You once said you had a long line of men ahead of me waiting to kill you, Lord Sheridan. But I've never been one to wait my turn. Besides, I owe you a fate worse than death. I can envision much, but I'm willing to settle with my original promise. My mares returned, and your life as a eunuch. I'll give you a few hours to prepare, Lord Sheridan. You might die if you are lucky."
Samir laughed darkly as he dragged the blade's edge down Cedric's body to just above his groin. He didn't cut Cedric, but the intention was clear.
"Now, stay quiet, and I might spare your wife a few hours of my men's attention."
Cedric's heart withered inside.
"Oh, God, Anne, my darling."
A despair like nothing he'd ever felt before overwhelmed him. Loving him had become a death sentence for her, for both of them. They had both found happiness, only to have it ripped away. Losing his sight was nothing compared to the crushing bleak truth of what losing Anne would do to him. He slumped in his bonds, giving up. There was no hope,
nothing he could do to save her. "You are fortunate that my mares were well cared for," Samir continued. "I might grant you death sooner, as a way to express my gratitude."
"This is all about the bloody horses. Did you steal them back as well?"
"Soon. They are being kept in Brighton, waiting to be put on a more reliable transport ship back to my country. This vessel is fine for human cargo, but, as we both know, my mares deserve much better." A scuffle of boots announced someone new had joined them. "I will join my men upstairs, Lord Sheridan, to take a turn with your wife. If she pleases me, I might keep her for myself. While I'm occupied with her, I wouldn't want you to become lonely. As it turns out, this fellow here is also familiar with your treacherous ways, as you were once intimately familiar with his sister, a lady's maid for Lady Ponsonby. He has volunteered to give you a sound thrashing." Samir's laughter made Cedric tense. He was strung up like a side of beef, unable to defend himself. He couldn't prepare himself for the blow to his stomach. His breath whooshed out, and he grunted as pain radiated out from that point of contact. Another crushing punch to his chest, and he wheezed. "Enjoy your stay aboard my ship, Lord Sheridan. It will only take us 3 weeks to get home, I believe." Samir laughed one more time, and then his booted steps on the stairs eventually faded.
"I swear to you, I never touched a hair on Ponsonby's maid."
There was a decent chance this was true. If he could only remember whether Freddy Ponsonby's mother actually had a comely-looking lady's maid or not.
"Shut up, Cedric," a voice hissed. "Wait until I'm sure he's gone."
It took him a second to recognize it.
"Jonathan?"
"Sorry about hitting you. I had to make it look convincing."
"How in the blazes did you end up on Alzerani's ship?"
Jonathan's hands brushed over his. There was a rasping sound as the bonds on his wrists were cut. He slumped to the ground, his legs weak after hanging for so long.
"I overheard a few sailors in London discussing a plan to kidnap someone in Brighton. I feared it might be you.
There wasn't time to warn you, so I found a way to hop on the ship."
"The devil you did!"
Cedric was so relieved that he nearly laughed. But he didn't have time. He struggled to his feet.
"We have to find Anne."
"Don't worry. We'll find her," Jonathan said. "You have to take it easy and be careful." Cedric frowned. "How many are there on this ship?" he asked. The odds were going against them. They were in the ocean on a ship with Alzerani and his crew. Jonathan must have understood the unspoken question.
"Too many to handle on our own. I sent word to Godric before I left port, but I do not know if the message reached him in time, or what he could do for us now that we're at sea."
"Damnation," Cedric growled.
"Where the hell is Ashton and that fleet he's always talking about?"
A distant cry from above their heads silenced them.
"Ship off the port bow!"
"What?" Cedric and Jonathan said together. They'd heard the shout, but even still, he was too afraid to hope.
"Jonathan, I need your help. We must find the powder room. Lead me to it, and then we find Anne."
He had a plan. It just had to work. He refused to accept any other outcome. Ashton rode up to Rushton Steading, glancing around at the lack of life inside the house. No groom rushed out to meet him. The hairs prickled on the back of his neck as he slid from the saddle and hastily looped the reins of his horse's bridle over an iron post by the door.
"Cedric,"
he called out, and walked up the main steps. The front door was ajar. Ashton tried to push it open, but it only shifted a few inches. He rammed his shoulder into the door, and it finally gave. When he was able to slip inside, he froze at the sight of blood streaking across the floor, leading to the body of a young man, the body that had been against the door he'd just forced open. Sean Hartley, the footman, lay half dead on the floor by the door. Around him lay two corpses of men Ashton didn't recognize. Their rough clothing and the weapons they still held in their hands identified them as dangerous men.
"My lord."
Sean's words escaped on a raspy breath.
Ashton removed his hat and clenched his fist in rage as he tried to soothe the younger man. He'd been stabbed and wasn't long for this world.
"Can you speak, lad? Tell me what happened. Where are the other servants?"
In a house this large, they should have been everywhere, seeing to their duties.
"It's the Sheik."
Sean's ashen face scrunched with pain.
"The staff fled to the Pickering estate, going to find help. Safe, I think. But they don't know."
He shuddered, his eyes briefly closing. "Don't know what?"
"Where are Lord and Lady Sheridan?"
Ashton asked the question. Surprised, his voice was steady. With the rage burning inside him, he could barely think straight.
"Taken. Ship in port. The Maiden Fair. Heard one of the men say it as they left,"
Sean said. Ashton pressed a hand to the young man's wounds, but he'd lost too much blood. Still, he had to try.
"I'm sorry."
The lad's eyes began to dim.
"You did well. So well, lad."
Ashton tried to think of what to tell the dying man.
"I..."
The young man sighed, and his head drooped. It wouldn't be long now. Ashton struggled to his feet as a loud clattering outside caught his attention. He moved Sean back from the door, hands trembling as he did so.
"What in God's name?"
Lucian's voice cut through the haze of rage clouding Ashton's mind. Ashton saw Godric, Lucian, and Charles in the doorway, staring at him and Sean in shock.
"It's Al Zarani. He's taken Anne and Cedric to a ship called the Maiden Fair. They'll still be docked in Brighton if we're lucky. We have to go."
Emily and Horatia followed their husbands inside. Emily gasped, and Horatia covered her mouth at the sight of the dying footman.
"Who is that?"
Horatia asked.
"His name is Sean, and he fought bravely," Ashton said. His damned, blood-covered hands wouldn't stop shaking.
"The servants have fled. We have to go after Cedric and Anne."
Charles came over to Ashton and offered a handkerchief to clean the blood off of his hands. Ashton accepted the silent offering, unable to look at Sean again. The lad didn't deserve to die. His loyalty to Lady Sheridan had gotten him killed.
"Emily," Godric said, "you and Horatia tend to Sean. Make him comfortable, if you can."
Ashton didn't miss the significant look that passed between Godric and his wife.
"Of course."
Emily took Horatia's hand and ran to get the necessary supplies. Once they were gone, it was only the three men in the Grand Hall. Another innocent death. Another casualty because of enemies they'd made over the years. Would it ever stop? Godric headed for the door.
"I'll get fresh horses from the stables."
Charles knelt by Sean, who looked at him helplessly and sighed.
"I'm so sorry," he said, taking the man's hand. Sean seemed to be having trouble staying conscious. "Listen to me, Sean. Listen. We will find them. We will save them. And when we do it, it will be because of your actions here today. You have done a great thing."
Emily and Horatia returned with what they needed to tend to Sean's final moments. Charles stepped back and looked at Ashton. His grey eyes were like dark storm clouds. It was rare to see this side of Charles, the side of the man who'd nearly drowned, instead of the carefree joker they'd come to expect. Fear and anger sparked in his eyes, the only part of him that betrayed his fraying control. As long as they'd been friends, it was these small details that Ashton didn't miss.
"I have the fastest ships, and one of them is currently in Brighton, ready to sail. If Al Zarani's ship is not in dock, we will track it to the ends of the earth, if need be."
Charles rose and clenched his jaw.
"And when we find him..."
Ashton's body was coiled like a tiger ready to strike.
"Then we kill him."
"I'm surprised you do not remember me, Lady Sheridan." Samir al-Zarani took a seat in the spacious cabin's only chair. Anne was seated in the corner by the narrow bed, watching him the way she would a venomous snake. She clutched the tattered pieces of her dress to cover her undergarments. She'd been roughly handled, her gown ripped,
but so far no one had touched her other than dragging her to this cabin.
Remember you? Of course I do. You nearly ran me over in Brighton a few days ago.
It had shocked her when she'd woken in the cabin and seen him. Samir shook his head, leaning back in his chair. Dark eyes like polished onyx, without any warmth, stared back at her. No. We met before that. Anne searched her memory frantically, trying to recall what he meant. I tried to steal you away on your estate, but it didn't work. I struck you hard enough that you must have forgotten me. If I had had the chance, I would have taken you then, and enjoyed knowing Sheridan was robbed of his bride. But waiting has turned out so much better. I have you both, and the punishment will be much more satisfying than I could have envisioned. Anne closed her eyes, trying to remember that awful night when she'd fallen down that hill onto the rocky bank of Cedric's Lake, wounded by a blow to the head. She'd believed she'd stumbled and struck her head. But it had been him. Opening her eyes, she raised her gaze to meet his. She knew what sort of man he was from Cedric's story, a slave trader. Anne had lived her life bottling up emotions, and now she was ready to unleash them upon this soulless creature that did not deserve the life he'd been given. Samir didn't miss her changing attitude. I always believed fine English ladies were gently bred, too sweet and weak. Yet there is fire in your eyes. He laughed softly and clapped his hands together. It will be a great joy to break you, and even more rewarding to do so in front of your husband. It took every ounce of her self-control not to lash out at him. She wouldn't win in a direct struggle. Surprise was her only ally. The question was how to accomplish a distraction so surprise would be available to her.
You are the man he bested at cards, the slave trader, a beast among men.
That story she'd been told at Emily's house seemed so long ago. So much had happened since then, so much had changed. Samir stood and struck her across the face. Pain exploded where his palm connected. She flinched back, expecting him to come at her again. She wiped a hand over her mouth and tasted the tangy, acidic taste of blood. Samir paced away from her, then turned back, his eyes twin burning coals.
You are testing me, trying to provoke me to kill you. It will not work. I mean to enjoy this.
His smile cut to the bone.
I mean to enjoy you.
The taste of blood lingered in her mouth, a hint of the torture she knew was to come if she couldn't buy herself time.
You do not know much about my husband, do you?
She asked.
If you did, you would not be so confident right now. You'd be looking out that window, worrying.
That caught Samir's attention, but he said nothing.
My husband is a member of the League of Rogues.
Samir seemed a little confused.
Rogues? Does that not mean criminal?
It means they do not play by the rules.
I doubt you've ever heard of them. If you had, you would know what sort of man you are dealing with. Her captor's lips twitched, amused.
And what sort is that?
A man who no doubt has already freed himself from your prison and is taking out your ship's crew one by one. She struggled to stand, still holding her dress together as she faced him boldly.
Your blind husband, stumbling around the ship, pouring at the doors because he can't find the handle. That does not frighten me.
Samir started toward her, one hand raised. She struck a defiant pose only an English lady could muster.
It should frighten you to the bone, because my husband is never alone. At this moment, there are five others coming, and they have ships and men of their own. They will do anything to save us. Track us across the world if they must. You can run home and hide in the deepest hole you can find, but you will not escape the League.
She was surprised at the bravado she'd managed to show, even knowing it wasn't true. They had stood a chance while still in England, but at sea, there was no hope of rescue. Samir threw his head back and laughed.
Oh, you do amuse me, Lady Sheridan.
You jest, of course. They won't find you. And by the time I'm through with you and that filth you call a husband, you will be begging me for a death that I shall not grant.
He raised his hand for another blow.
So, this is to be my end, defending Cedric's honor and the League.
There were worse things in life than dying to protect those she loved, she supposed. Samir was stopped short by a shout from outside.
Ship off the port bow!
The cry was echoed a few more times, each shout coming closer to the cabin where Anne and Samir stood. A scruffy crewman burst in through the cabin door, sliding to a halt.
What is happening outside?
The sailor squinted and apologized.
A ship, sir. Captain says it's bearing down on us, and you are to stay in the cabin, in case we come under fire.
A ship? Anne was too afraid to hope. It wasn't possible that Ashton had been able to catch up with them, let alone find them. Samir grabbed her and thrust her into the sailor's hands.
Tie her to the bed,
Samir ordered, before he stormed from the room. The man turned Anne around, meaning to force her down onto the bed as ordered. But Anne dropped her ripped gown to the floor and lifted her petticoats high enough to knee the man in the bollocks. The man crumpled to the floor with a piteous moan. Anne gave him a second blow while he was down, then leapt over his prone form and into the narrow passageway of the ship. Sailors were scrambling to man positions. Others shouted out orders about prepping the cannons. No one paid her any attention as she dodged the chaos on the deck. In the distance, a ship was quickly gaining, and would soon be upon them. Was it someone who would help them? How could she find Cedric and escape?
Cedric, where are you?
Fear sliced through her as she dashed back toward the lower decks. She had to find him. Chapter 24. Cedric leaned against a large wooden barrel bound by copper hoops. His nose picked up the fine acrid aroma of black powder, sulphur, saltpeter, and finely ground charcoal, a deadly combination when stuffed into a ship's cannon.
Jonathan, I have an idea.
What?
This barrel is full of black powder.
Cedric rapped his knuckles on the wood.
Is this plan of yours going to get us killed?
Cedric hesitated before answering.
There's always a chance.
Jonathan snorted.
Let us try to find the route off this ship that leaves us all breathing. Now, what's your plan?
There should be a light room close by. We prepare a charge, set it alight at the right moment, and escape. Cedric knew the plan was risky, but escape was not enough. They had to destroy this ship, but first they needed to find Anne.
Let us be clear. You want to set fire to the powder room.
Jonathan moved closer, his booted steps echoing on the floor. Above them the sailors were scrambling to their battle stations.
Yes, we wouldn't have much time after we set fire to the room. We need to find Anne and a way off this ship, but it's all for naught if this ship is still afloat.
Jonathan laughed, but it bore a nervous, edgy sound.
Are all your plans this insane?
Cedric rolled his eyes.
Do you have a better one?
Very well. Jonathan sighed. Stay here whilst I find the light room. Cedric stumbled about, searching for a tool to open the barrel of powder. His hands came across a tool, something that felt a bit like a poker. He returned to the powder barrel and pried open the lid. The wood creaked in protest, but finally gave in. Footsteps were Cedric's only warning that he'd been found out. He dodged to the right as something slashed his chest. It stung like the devil, but it didn't feel deep.
Cheating again, Samir hissed. You simply cannot accept when you are beaten.
Cedric dodged again, Samir's words proving to be an invaluable warning to his actions. But he couldn't dodge the man forever. He needed to get hold of Samir's hands. Then he would stand a fighting chance.
You need a sword to take me down.
What? You don't have enough faith in your fighting skills to take on a blind man.
It was a small chance the man would be manipulated to do that, but it was worth it. Samir snarled.
You don't think I can kill you with my bare hands?
You're the one in a hurry to run me through with a blade, Al Zarani.
Don't you want the satisfaction of strangling the life out of me? What sense of justice will you get with a sword?
Cedric held up his hands, fists loosely clenched in case he needed to grab his opponent, rather than throw a punch.
Samir snorted.
You're right. I want to choke you slowly, make you feel every agonizing minute of your death. A slow death for a man who cheats,
Samir replied smugly. The sound of a blade clattering to the ground echoed a few feet away. The moment the blade was abandoned, Samir tackled him. They hit the open barrel behind him. Cedric hissed out in pain as Samir punched his lower stomach repeatedly. Roaring, Cedric pulled his head back and thrust it forward. The crack of his skull against Samir's momentarily stunned them both. But Samir recovered quickly enough to stagger to his feet. Cedric got up and slammed into Samir, knocking them both to the ground. Pain shot through his head, and for a second he thought he saw the hazy shadow of a man lying close to him. Cedric didn't hesitate and hit Samir square in the jaw. A lucky blow, if there ever was one. It was the advantage he needed. Scrambling off, he searched for the sword. When the blade nicked his hand, he cursed before he was able to grab the grip. He heard scraping noises behind him as Samir struggled to get up.
You English pig!
Samir shouted. Cedric fell flat on his back, sword raised just as Samir landed on top of him. The blade met some resistance as it plunged into Samir's ribs. The man grunted and sagged on top of Cedric.
You cheated!
Samir panted angrily. That I did, he shoved Samir's body off him. Just like that knight playing whist. I don't play fair with slavers. Cedric leaned against one of the barrels. His chest burned and his head ached. The grey fog about his eyes seemed to waver with black and white tendrils of colour, like fleeting shadows, like the ghost of what he used to see.
Samir coughed. The sound a sickly gurgle now.
You cheating bastard!
I prefer rogue, Cedric said. The rattling breath of his enemy finally ceased. Just then, like a phantom's voice amongst the noise of the crew, Anne's voice echoed up the hall.
Cedric?
He moved in the direction of the sound.
Anne? Where are you? Cedric, thank God!
The sound of her slippered feet was music to his ears. He opened his arms, and she wrapped herself around him. Anne gasped.
You're bleeding.
Reminds me of the day you proposed, he said with a happy chuckle.
Oh, Cedric.
She tensed in his arms.
Is Al-Zarani?
Dead. Yes. I'll explain later, but we must go. Now.
He held her in his arms, but let her guide him into the narrow corridor.
Jonathan! He shouted. I'm here. Stand back,
Jonathan warned. Heat blossomed close to Cedric's chest, and he instinctively curled himself around Anne as they moved back. He thought for a moment he could see a filmy curtain of light, like glimpsing of fire through heavy woods. Flickers, shadows, but nothing more. Was he seeing the glow from a lantern? He was too afraid to hope.
Jonathan, what are you doing?
Anne asked, her body tense in Cedric's arms.
Well, my heart, we are going to blow up the ship.
What?
There's no other way for us to escape alive, Cedric said. These men will fire on that ship, and they will be forced to fire back. We don't want to be on board when the cannonballs start flying through the walls around us. You have to trust me on this.
Yes, I trust you.
Despite the touch of panic in Anne's voice, it was nevertheless resolute.
Jonathan will set the fire, then we will run for the deck. If we can reach a longboat, we'll take that, but there may not be time. If I say jump, jump over the side. Do you understand?
She grasped one of Cedric's hands in hers.
Promise to stay with me.
I will, he vowed, holding her hand tight.
Jonathan interjected.
Right. I'm ready to light this. You two go ahead. I'll catch up with you on deck.
Cedric steeled himself.
Be careful, Jonathan. Audrey will never forgive me if she learns I let you blow yourself up.
He meant to tease the younger man, but also knew Jonathan would understand all the things he didn't have the time or words to say.
"I'll find you when it's done," Jonathan replied.
Cedric turned back to Anne.
"Lead me to the deck, lady wife. It's time to make our escape."
Anne and Cedric hurried up the flight of stairs and burst out onto the main deck. He whipped his head about as though listening to the crew around him.
"What's happening, Anne? Be my eyes."
Men raced to positions, and men shouted orders and reports.
"She's a large sloop, sir. We'll never outrun her."
"No flag signals ordering us to stand down," yelled another. "Gun ports are open."
Anne heard who she presumed was the captain bark.
"Bring her to port. Load cannons. Load chain shot. Target her masts."
It was chaos.
"How close is the other ship?"
Cedric tugged her to the railing, and they carefully but quickly worked their way across the maze of ropes and ship equipment on deck.
"Half a mile away. There might be another chasing behind it."
She squinted in the bright light, trying to assess the distance between them and the ship. Thankfully, none of the crew did more than glance at them with irritation as they rushed past.
"We don't have enough chain shot, sir. Load the remaining cannons with grape shot," the captain ordered.
"Aim for the decks," a midshipman added.
"Belay that. Aim for the sails. We have to slow her down."
She was terrified she and Cedric would be hauled down into the hull of the ship by someone, but they were far more worried about the approaching sloop. When she focused on the ships in the distance, she saw two flags. The Union Jack flapped against the wind of both vessels. The larger and closer vessel also carried the flag of the Royal Navy at the rear. The ship just behind it was closing the gap, and she saw more clearly that ship's flag. Cedric curled an arm around Anne's waist, keeping her close as they moved.
"Do you recognize any of the flags?"
"There's a British flag and a navy flag on the first. The second has a dark blue flag with a white flower on it."
It was hard to make out the shape in the distance with all the wind. Cedric laughed.
"Good God! He found us!"
And then he whooped loudly and kissed Anne on the lips.
"Who found us?"
She had no idea what he was talking about.
"Ash! That's his company flag. Must be one of his ships. He's brought the bloody navy with him, the sly dog."
Before Anne could say anything, she saw Jonathan run up on deck, shouting,
"Jump! We don't have time!"
Jonathan sprinted across the deck, leaping over a pair of sailors bent over a cannon they were preparing to load.
"Fire in the powder room!" he bellowed.
That single cry and the ominous coiling of black smoke from below the deck sent sailors scattering like rats.
"What about a longboat?"
Anne asked.
"No time."
Cedric glanced around, cursed under his breath. He thought he could make out some shadows, but even if it was more than just wishful thinking, it wasn't enough to navigate by.
"Is there a part of the deck without a railing?"
Anne glanced around.
"Yes."
"Do we have a clear shot to run to it?"
"Yes, it's about 15 feet.
She swallowed hard.
"We're really going to jump?"
It looked like another 20 feet to the ocean. Cedric cupped her face with his free hand.
"Yes, jump away from the ship as far as you can. Kick for the surface once you're in the water, and get as far away as you can. Don't let go of my hand. If we become separated, I may not be able to find the surface."
The desperate look on his face tore at her already battered heart.
"I won't let go,"
she vowed.
"Then run!"
He propelled her forward, and she guided him as they dashed across the deck. Jonathan met them halfway and shouted as he leapt over the railing and into the air. Anne screamed, unable to contain the panic as her stomach jumped into her throat as she and Cedric fell. The dark water rose up to meet them, and in a hard smack she struck the surface, then sank below. Icy water swallowed her up. The shock of the cold water nearly made her scream. Her grip on Cedric's hand was tenuous, but she kicked away her petticoats, weighing her down. A heavy vibration rocked the world around her. Looking up through the water, blurred streaks of red and orange consumed the skies above. She kicked herself upward until she at last surfaced. White smoke cloaked the area just above the water, and fiery hunks of the ship's hull splashed around her. Cedric broke through the surface with a painful gasp a moment later. She reached out for him and grabbed his hand.
Cedric!
Anne! What? Cedric's cry was silenced by a mighty crash. Burning wood singed her as part of the ship's wreckage fell on her husband. She cried out, and then her hand, the one tightly locked with Cedric's, started to drop as Cedric's head slipped beneath the waves. The weight of his body sinking was too much for her to hold on to.
Cedric, no!
She dove under the water, her eyes stinging as she searched for him. The water was thick with debris. She swam until her lungs burned and forced her back to the surface. A piece of wood large enough to hold on to floated within her reach. Kicking and paddling over to it, she grabbed it and rested a few moments before diving back down to look for Cedric again.
I won't let go. I can't let go.
But he wasn't there. She couldn't see him. When she broke the surface a third time, her body had become stiff with cold, and she didn't have enough strength to go back. The body of a sailor floated past, and when it touched Anne, she flinched. She could barely see anything through the white cloud from the powder explosion. Every part of her body hurt. She clung to that bit of wood, her cheek pressed to the roughened surface, blinking back tears. It was no use. She wept in silent grief. The only two men she'd ever loved, she'd lost. Her father, and now her husband. Too stunned to move, she allowed the sea to swallow her heart within its depths. Wherever Cedric was now, so went her heart and soul. A longboat cut through the smoke, and the distant shouts hailed her. The navy sloop loomed out of the smoke, and only a short distance away, Ashton's vessel drifted closer. Men shouted at each other from the decks, pointing in her direction and preparing a longboat. Anne couldn't breathe, let alone answer them. Her mind had shut down, unable to process what she was seeing. Faces, marked with blackened streaks of soot, peered down at her when the longboat drifted up.
"She's alive!"
someone shouted. Hands reached down, pried her vice-like grip off the driftwood, and she was hauled into the boat.
"Anne, look at me,"
a gentle but stern voice commanded. She opened her eyes and saw a golden-haired man sighing with visible relief. Charles. The name came slowly through the pain. Another face, one just as wet as hers. Jonathan, leaned in by Charles.
"Where's Cedric?"
Lips trembling, she looked back to the wreckage. Her throat felt as if she was swallowing glass shards. Every protective barrier she'd ever built had been obliterated in the wake of that explosion. She could no longer contain her pain, the rage at her loss. The only man who'd loved her for the woman she was gone. Everything was gone now. She'd been rendered blind, not in her eyes, but her heart. She'd lost Cedric forever. Charles slipped his coat off and wrapped it around her shoulders, but she barely noticed.
"He's gone,"
she whispered. The boat went silent. As one, their gazes drifted toward the sea, which had claimed the life of the man they'd come to save. The memory of an old poem her father used to recite came unbidden to her, and the ocean claimed her lover, the waves folding him in an endless blue embrace. Mourn not this king of seas, this prince of tides. Chapter 25. Pain. Excruciating darkness. Stars. Blue. Cedric's head throbbed as he fought to get away from whatever was dragging him deeper and deeper into the sea's vast depths. His strength was rapidly fading, and his lungs would explode unless he could get to the surface. His shirt tore, and the binding that had trapped him to the wreckage was gone. He fought as though nothing in his life had mattered until now. All he could see was Anne's face, and his desire to live. His desire to see her looking up at him with love and endless wonder. New strength flooded his limbs. The water stung his eyes, burned them like hot pokers. But he kept swimming toward that brightening point of light that he knew had to be the surface. When his head burst above the water, he sucked in a loud, agonizing breath. A shocking white glared into his eyes, and he blinked, raised one hand as he treaded water, and looked about. Looked, as grey shapes appeared in the fog.
What in God's name?
Pieces of wood bumped into his shoulders as he breathed in the thick smoke. That was what made things grey. Not his blindness, but gunpowder smoke and burning wreckage. He could see. Not well, but by God, he could see. He started to laugh, but choked as he breathed in the smoke. He saw several longboats drifting through the ship's wreckage. The one closest to him had several people in it, all of them facing away. Their backs to him. A woman was in the middle, and her soaked dark hair hung to her waist. Anne. She was alive. Not yet strong enough to call out, he started to swim toward the boat before it left him behind. As he drew closer, he recognized Godric, Ashton, Charles, Lucien, even Jonathan on board. Just beyond them, two ships, the HMS Ranger and Ashton's merchant vessel Black Lily, were drifting around the wreckage of the Maiden Fair. The entire League and Anne were on that boat, all staring silently at something he could not see. Dread filled him. What had happened? It had to be something horrible, something he couldn't bear, if it had struck his friends and wife speechless. When he reached the longboat, he swam around to the side. He clung to the edge of the boat and searched the floating wreckage, trying to spot whatever had devastated his friends. Anne's face was strewn with tears, and Charles had a comforting arm around her shoulders. Cedric forced his gaze back to the sinking ship. They must think I'm dead. It was Jonathan, the one nearest to him, who slowly turned his head and saw Cedric clinging to the side of the boat. Cedric! His startled shout made everyone jump. Jonathan rushed over to where Cedric gripped the side of the longboat. Exhausted, Cedric latched onto the younger man's arms and allowed himself to be hauled aboard. No sooner had he righted himself did Anne launch herself at him, sobbing incoherently. They fell together in a wet mess. Ashton wiped at his eyes and cleared his throat.
We thought we'd lost you.
There was a rough catch in his voice. Everyone looked too strained, too devastated. The admission of how much he was loved, not just by Anne, but by his friends as well, struck his heart. Takes more than a burning cottage, horse thieves, piratical slavers, and an exploding ship to kill me, eh? He teased, trying to ease everyone's pain. Charles chuckled.
Right. Should have known better than to think that could take you down.
Cedric looked down at Anne, who stared at him with that look he'd hoped to someday see. An endless wonder in her eyes, and love, so much love, that simply seeing it now gave him wings enough to fly.
My heart,
he whispered, feeling suddenly shy, so damn shy of his own wife. It was as though he was looking at a familiar stranger. He'd grown so used to her touch, her taste, her scent. To see her, finally see her again, after so long in the dark. She raised a hand and stroked the backs of her fingers across his cheeks.
Don't cry, she begged him. Please don't. If you do, I won't be able to stop.
To hell with it.
He buried his face in her neck, curling his body around hers, clinging to her. His heart, his love, his other half. They were alive and safe.
I can see you,
he kept saying as he wept. Never in all his life would anything be as beautiful as his beloved Anne and his dearest friends. The last 5 months had been an awful nightmare.
But I've finally woken up.
He brushed his lips over Anne's, tasting the sea and her tears. He vowed from that moment on, she would never cry again, except from joy. Ashton stood on the deck of the Black Lily, his captain Ellis Bristow beside him.
Close call, Lord Lennox. We almost didn't reach the Ranger in time.
The captain, his hat tucked under one arm, watched the rolling waves, his sharp eyes missing nothing.
I know.
Ashton held his breath a moment, trying to erase the thoughts of what might have been if they hadn't gotten to the maiden fair when they did. They'd learned at the port which direction the slaver's ship had gone, and in the race to catch her, soon learned a navy ship was also in pursuit. The joy at having an ally, however, became terror when the man from the crow's nest called down that the ranger wasn't ordering the maiden to stand down, and instead was opening gun ports. Captain Bristow desperately arranged for his own message to be raised, warning the navy ship that English hostages were on board their target. The captain of the Ranger had heard them and ordered his crew to prepare for boarding instead. But moments later the maiden went up in flames, without a shot being fired. Seeing the ship burn and the bodies floating among the flotsam had almost killed Ashton. He'd feared Cedric, Anne, and Jonathan to be among the dead. He glanced down from the top deck of the Lily to see Anne and Cedric heading to the cabins below. Cedric's arm was curled around Anne's shoulder, and she clung to him, as though afraid to let him out of her sight. Cedric paused just beneath Ashton and glanced up, nodding at him in silent gratitude for the Lily's arrival. Miracles do happen. After everything that had been lost over the years, sometimes the world gave things back, like Cedric's sight. Ashton wasn't the sort to put his trust in faith, but he couldn't deny their good fortune today. Still, he feared what tomorrow would bring. When he'd spoken to the captain of the Ranger, he'd learned that he'd been given orders to sail to Brighton to find and sink the Maiden Fair, without giving quarter to prisoners. He'd been told it was a slaver ship, but it was supposed to be devoid of human cargo. The orders had been given through the proper chain of command, yet Ashton had the distinct impression he was playing a vast game of chess, one with a board that spanned the country, and that somehow, even with this, Hugo Waverley was his opponent. Ash. Lucian climbed the stairs to the deck and nodded at Captain Bristow. Bristow offered them some privacy and left to speak to one of his lieutenants. How's Cedric? Ashton asked. Good. Better than good. He's seeing again and can't seem to stop smiling at his wife. Silly fool. Ashton heard the note of love in those last two words. Last Christmas had been a dark hour for both Cedric and Lucian, but they'd weathered the storm and come out stronger. Horatio would have killed me if our baby had lost its uncle. It would have devastated them all to lose Cedric. And Jonathan, how is the lad? They glanced at the lower deck where Jonathan was braced with his back against one of the masts, his sandy-coloured hair blowing in the wind. He'd risked much to get to Cedric and save him, far more than Ashton had asked of him, and that had truly made him one of the League of Rogues now. He's a bit distant. I sense he's feeling lost, even after so many months of adjusting to his new position. He needs someone to ground him, keep him in high spirits, give him a wife to chase and tame, and he'll settle down and be happy. I think it's time Cedric brought Audrey home. Ashton laughed, easing the tension he felt. I never thought you'd be the one to suggest a wife was good for a man. Lucian turned his knowing gaze toward Ashton. A good wife is good for every man. You ought to remember that the next time you let a Scottish lass get the better of you in a theatre alcove. Ashton blanched, causing Lucian to chuckle. You're not the only one with eyes and ears, Ash. The staff at the Opera House see more than anyone realizes. Might I suggest you find some other way to deal with Lady Melbourne before she brings your business endeavours down around your ears? With nothing more than a smug grin, Lucian left Ashton at the railing, pale as a white flag of surrender. He was right, though. Ashton had to deal with Lady Melbourne before she did exactly that, ruin his business interests. Cedric lounged back on the settee in his drawing room, arms folded behind his head as a white and brown puppy dragged one of his boots across the carpet. Little Forrest growled and snarled, his dagger-like puppy teeth making little scrapes in the leather. Cedric didn't care. Life was perfect, puppy teeth marks and all. It had been 2 weeks since he'd been rescued from the waters off Brighton, and his sight had fully returned, Headaches had pained him for the first few days, but once the swelling from the blow to his head had subsided, so did the pain. The door to the study opened as Anne and Audrey flew in like a pair of doves. Anne looked ravishing in her rose-red gown, trimmed with embroidered wildflowers on the Van-dyked sleeves and hem. Her full hips accented her tiny waist, especially when she placed her hands on them now to glower.
"Cedric, you mustn't let him chew on your boots. You're spoiling him."
She lunged for Forrest. The King Charles Spaniel froze, as he always did when Anne got frustrated with his mischievous antics. After she snapped up the boot, the spell was broken, and the dog ran in a wild scamper for her ankles, nipping playfully. Before he could damage her skirt, he tripped over his own paws and rolled onto his back, his pink tongue sticking out. Audrey giggled.
"Bit of a rogue himself, isn't he?"
Cedric couldn't help but beam at her. She'd come home from Europe early, only 2 weeks after their escape from Alzerani's ship. It was as though she'd known he needed her, because she and Lady Rochester had arrived before anyone from the League had contacted them.
"Forrest is a scamp, kitten, not a rogue," Cedric clarified as he rose from the couch.
Despite Audrey's presence in the room, his wife walked up to him and curled her arms about his neck, kissing him fully on the mouth.
"How are you?"
Anne asked. He returned the kiss for a long moment before he replied.
"Like a better version of myself," he said, then smiled. "A much better version."
Anne pursed her lips.
"As long as you remain wicked in one or two areas, I shan't complain."
Her laugh made his body hum with desire. It was so good to see her smile. She had no idea how much he'd missed it.
"Are you ready to come see Sean? He needs another reprimand for trying to leave his bed," Anne said.
"Of course. I'm half tempted to tie the man down to keep him there. Bloody fool."
Ashton and the others had thought Sean Hartley to be dead when they'd left Rushton Steading. Yet as Emily and Horatia had tended to what they thought were his final moments, the man had stubbornly clung to life. Staunching his wounds and making him comfortable, they had fetched the village doctor, who had once again worked a miracle. Following Anne up the stairs, Cedric entered a guest bedroom. Sean was pale, but his eyes were clear and alert. One of the downstairs maids was spooning hot broth into his mouth. The maid jumped to her feet and curtsied as Cedric entered, her eyes downcast, cheeks flushed. Cedric held up a hand.
"Please, don't let me disturb you. Stay."
The maid sat down in the chair by the bed and resumed her task. Cedric leaned against one of the bedposts at the foot of the bed and scowled down at the willful young man.
"Now listen here, Hartley. My wife says you're doing your damnedest to get out of bed before you should."
Sean began to protest.
"Don't argue with me, lad. You won't win. I never officially terminated your employ here before, and I'll be damned if you make me do so now. It is my order, as master of this house, that you stay right here and let lovely ladies tend to your every need for as long as the doctor believes you need to stay in bed. Understood?"
The maid blushed at that. With a nod, Sean eased back onto the pillows of his bed. Cedric glanced at the woman.
"I'd like a few minutes alone with him."
Anne and the maid quietly exited the bedchamber. Cedric took the empty chair by the bed.
"I owe you a debt, Hartley. You defended us more bravely and truer than any soldier. And you saved both our lives by telling Ashton what had happened. Those are debts I can never repay."
Cedric stood and made sure Sean was listening.
"There are dark times ahead for me, for Anne, and the League. We'll need a good man like you on our side. I'm depending on you to get better."
Sean swallowed and nodded.
"Of course."
"Good. Now, if I were you, I'd let that pretty little maid serve you as long as you can manage it. She has an eye for you, I think." He winked at Sean and then left the room, chuckling at Sean's flustered expression. Anne and the maid were outside.
"Go on and tend to him," he said.
The maid ducked back inside. Once he and Anne were alone, he pulled his wife into his arms, dipping her down low as if in a dance, and kissed her senseless. She touched her kiss-swollen lips, her dark lashes fluttering.
What was that for?
He lifted her chin so she could see his expression. It took me far too long to realize what joy I had within reach. His mother's favorite hymn came to mind, and he knew she would approve. I was blind, but now I see. Anne's eyes shimmered.
And what do you see?
She asked. A long and wonderful life with you, my heart. He bent his head down and kissed her, letting go of every dark memory tainted by pain. All that remained was an all-consuming feeling of love for Anne, and the possibility of having everything he'd ever wanted in life. And it all started with one passionate kiss to build their lives upon. Epilogue. Daniel Sheffield rapped his knuckles on the door to Hugo Waverley's study.
Enter.
Daniel nudged the door open and sauntered in. This was not going to be good news he delivered, and he hoped playing calm would help to lessen his master's rage. They'd had a perfect plan. It shouldn't have gone awry. Once their man in Brighton had sent word Al-Zarani's ship had docked and he was making his move, Waverley had informed the Royal Navy and dispatched the HMS Ranger with orders to sink the ship to send a message to slave traders operating in English waters. No prisoners were to be taken under any circumstances. What Daniel hadn't expected, and neither had Waverley, was Lord Lennox's timely interference.
Well, is it done?
Waverley looked up from his desk covered in papers, most of them bearing royal seals.
No. The HMS Ranger was intercepted by Lord Lennox's ship, which informed them of British subjects being held captive on the ship.
Lennox!
Hugo crumpled the sheet of paper under his hand.
Yes, sir. A fire was set by someone on board Al-Zarani's ship, and it sank. Now it's at the bottom of the sea, as you'd hoped, but Sheridan and his wife survived.
Daniel kept one hand still resting on the latch of the door, in case he needed to make a hasty exit. Waverley sat back in his chair and frowned.
That man is like a bloody cat with 9 lives.
Daniel waited for the fury to spark in Waverley's eyes, or for the man to shout or throw something. Such displays of temper had happened in the past. The Ranger did recover this floating among the wreckage, however. He revealed the item he'd been hiding behind his back. A cane with a silver lion's head. When he held it out to Waverley, the man's grim expression turned to a hard smile.
Well now, he chuckled, my property has finally been returned to me.
Daniel retreated back to the door of Waverley's study.
I've been to the White House in Soho, and handled the matter regarding the individuals that Al-Zarani sold.
Waverley steepled his fingers together.
And you made it clear that we don't hold for that manner of trade here.
Yes. They tried to claim the women were simply employed by the house. I made sure they understood how mistaken they were. They won't be purchasing anything of that sort any time soon. But I learned one female was auctioned off before I arrived.
Just one. I commend you on your speed. I believe you'll be even more interested to learn who purchased her.
This was the one bit of good news Daniel had. Lawrence Russell. For the first time in a long while, Waverley smiled.
Well, that's certainly interesting. A Russell buying a slave. Look into it, but do not act. I do believe that's a card we shall hold until it's time to play it.
Waverley gazed out the window to the back of the garden of his townhouse. Lady Waverley was sitting in the garden with another woman, chatting idly while a nurse held a tiny boy's hand. The lad walked on chubby legs, clutching his nurse's fingers as they navigated the garden's gravel path. Waverley's son, Heath, barely a year old. He had his father's dark hair, but his mother's delicate features, which would likely make him grow into a handsome buck some day. Daniel flinched when he realized Waverley was now watching Daniel, rather than the boy.
Forget Sheridan for now. Lennox's shipping affairs have become increasingly inconvenient.
What is he currently up to? What does our man inside have to report? Daniel stood to attention and focused back on Waverley. He says Lennox is quarrelling with Lady Melbourne. It seems she is intruding upon his business in the shipping lines. She's buying contracts out from under him and generally running amok over Lennox's carefully structured empire. Waverley smiled again. Excellent. Lady Melbourne. I haven't had the pleasure of meeting her. I want you to find out everything you can about this woman. If she can be manipulated into crippling Lennox, I want to know. Enemies of the League are my welcomed allies. Yes, sir. Daniel paused just outside the door when Waverley spoke again. Bring me the chess pieces, Sheffield, and I'll put Lennox in a checkmate. He cannot escape. This concludes Her Wicked Proposal by Lauren Smith. Narrated by Heather Wilds. Copyright 2016 by Lauren Smith. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Sam Hain Publishing and was produced in the year 2016 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.